right, let's put things into context or put things into perspective before we get started. So let's start with the Olympics. And we have a man who, or a woman, who wants to be the best in the world. And they have the natural abilities to do it, but of course they've got to begin the process of training. Now, every day has to be very difficult. And at the end of a very difficult day, if they reached all their goals, are they happy or unhappy? I mean, they're in pain, they're miserable, but are they happy or are they unhappy?
Happy.
They're happy because they're reaching their goals. And the more pain, you know, we have a saying in our society, I don't know if we believe it or not, but no pain, no gain. Anybody ever heard of that? Or when the going gets tough, that's when the tough keep going or get going. And so when you have a goal like that, the pain and the deprivation and the problems are actually bringing satisfaction and joy. And it's kind of the opposite. If you have a day where you don't do very much, and that night maybe you eat too much, you have a really good night and you really enjoy yourself, but then how do you feel the next day? See, now you're not happy with yourself. And so when it comes to trials, we're never going to feel the joy that James commands that we have unless we put that into perspective, because as the Hebrew writer put it, all suffering, all chastening seems to be what in the beginning?
Grievous.
Not joyous, but grievous. But afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. So this is probably one of the greatest exercises in faith and a great barometer really to tell us where our priorities are. Because if our priorities truly are, in Hebrews chapter 12, we're running with patience the race set before us. And the word patience there, same word here, endurance. We are the chastenings that the Lord is bringing to us, the problems, the setbacks, the difficulties, the circumstances in our life where we wish they were different. And so now it's bringing joy. Count it all joy, consider it all joy, deem it all joy when you fall into every kind of trial. And remember, fall into means what? Not my fault. It's not my decision. This is something that just happened. It's not something that I would have chosen. It's not something that I want. But we're all going to have to go through these manifold kinds of trials. If we live long enough, we're going to go through bereavements. We're going to go through health problems. The dark days are going to come. We're going to see financial setbacks. We're going to have all sorts of trials. And we're also going to be dealing with persecutions and tribulations. And what did Jesus say about that? When men call you evil, they cast out your name as evil. They say all manner of evil against you falsely. What does he say we should do?
Rejoice.
Rejoice and be exceedingly glad. Now, is that easy? That's a spiritual maturity that we have to develop. But again, these are commands. In verse 2, he puts it in the command mode when he says, my brethren, count it all joy. Consider it all joy when you fall into manifold trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. And then another command, make sure patience has its perfect work. Now, what's the perfect work of patience? Counting it all joy. That's what patience brings us to. And so we need to have that perfect work so that we can be perfect, we can be mature and complete, lacking nothing. But now enters the difficulty, and that is, it's not always easy to do this, and not everybody can do it. Some people, they see the facts, they understand these are commands, but they can't do it. Now what? We are in rebellion against the Lord, because when we go into these trials, we're not happy about them. We can't get this sense of joy and satisfaction. So what is his next command in verse 5? If you lack wisdom, ask. Okay? And that's a command. The word ask is a command. So if you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach. And then there's another command in verse 6, and that is, ask in faith without doubting. So this has to be something that we really want and that we have taken the time to understand. Like I say, I think we need to put it all into perspective. We are running a race, and we have to let go of the weights and the sin that so easily besets us. And one of the ways that God has for doing that for us is these various trials. Trials change our perspective. Trials help us to let go. They help us to let go of this life. I think that's why we have. I think that when God cursed the world with sin, he made it reflective of what we had done to ourselves, but he also made it so that we would have the ability to get through this life. And so these things are necessary. They are important. And again, the Hebrews chapter 12, he spends a lot of time on that, just a few pages back from right here, where he talks about the various trials and tribulations that Christians have. And he warns us not to let them get us down. So the command in verse 2 is to feel joy when you fall into various trials. Now, immediately, do we always have to feel joyous when something bad happens?
Not initially,
but over time, we should be able to look back on it and see the benefits we receive from it instead of looking at the loss. Now, the loss is never going to bring joy. Whatever that loss is, you're not going to feel joy over the loss. But if you gained from the loss, then it's like that man who sold all that he had. He made every sacrifice, but what did he do? He bought a field. And what was in the field?
Treasure.
The treasure. And what does he? How does he feel?
Joy.
Well, joy for the loss or joy for the gain? So that's where we have to focus. We have to focus on the gain. If we continue to focus on the loss, I mean, let's face it, no one's going to enjoy the loss, but it's the benefit from the loss that James is focusing on. It is creating endurance. It is giving us a knowledge that I can do this, that I've already been able to prove it. And it's like the apostles, after failing Jesus so many times and failing him in the garden, when the opportunity came in Acts chapter 4 to suffer, to be beaten, what does it say they did? They rejoiced that they were counted worthy to suffer for the name and that they were actually able to do it. And so this again, I mean, logically, spiritually, and scripturally, we all know this is true. If we add it all up, we absolutely know for certain that from Job, from all the prophets, from Jesus, from all the different situations, we know that this is true. But does that make it easy to do it? No. And a lot of us really struggle with that. So now James gives us the final step. And that is if you lack wisdom. And we had a sermon kind of laid the foundation for this. And I went ahead and took a little time this afternoon. You can see that little box on the first page and it goes into the second page. And that's just basically a summation of what God has to say about wisdom. And so let me just read that first paragraph. Yeah, the first paragraph is just very short. So the final step will always be this. When we have the truth, have the faith, but can't make the application, we start praying for wisdom. So we add up all the truth, we get all the facts, we get all the information, we can see as clear as a bell. I mean, would James command us to do something that we didn't have the ability to do? No. But what if I don't know how to do it? I mean, is that my fault if I don't know how to do it? No, well, not at first. Yeah. After a while it might be. Because God's going to say, and I think that's where the upbraiding comes in. We'll talk about that when we get there. But so if you lack the wisdom, how do I know if I lack wisdom or not? Not rocket science.
You don't have the joy.
I don't have the joy.
Okay.
Then I must lack the wisdom. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I either lack the faith, I lack the knowledge, or I lack the ability to take the faith and the knowledge and make the proper application. And I've got to figure that out. I've got to find out. Whenever there's a lack like this, I've got to look within myself and figure out where the problem is and get busy working on it. Virgil?
I've always looked at this. If we're not able to deal with the problems of life, then we lack wisdom. And we need to pray for that wisdom that will help us to take care of the problems of life.
Okay, and that's right. And I was going to make that point, so since Virgil's brought it up, we'll make it now. And that is, contextually, what's this wisdom for here?
To overcome.
Joy and trial,
yeah.
Right? But is there any other area where I might need wisdom because I don't know how to do what God wants me to do?
So many.
And I can't stay riveted on the Lord's Supper. Maybe I need to ask God for wisdom to do that because I know I'm supposed to remember him. And I know that it's important that I remember him. And if I can't sing and make melody in my heart, in other words, my mind's just bouncing from here to there, what should I do? Pray for the wisdom to stay focused. And we need to learn discipline. And discipline is something that comes from wisdom, as we'll see in these verses here. But I think that this passage is actually a very critical part of the role that God wants to play in our life. And that is, whenever I don't have quite enough to put it all together, what does God say? How do I bridge the gap?
Ask for wisdom.
Ask me to give you wisdom. George?
We can ask forever and ever. If we don't study the Bible, continue to study the problem in the Bible that we're having a problem with, God doesn't just automatically give us wisdom.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've gone back and forth over this. Let's say that I study and I study and I study and I study, but I never ask for wisdom. You do the same amount of study, but you ask for wisdom. What's going to happen after 5 years? You going to have more wisdom than me? Or is it going to be the same? I think human effort takes us to a certain point. But did Solomon have to do something for God to give him that wisdom? No, he just gave it to him. He just gave it to him. So I don't disagree. You've got to have, but I've already laid that foundation. We have the facts. We have the faith. We're just not able to put it together. Now what do we do? Well, we can keep looking over the facts and keep studying and trying to keep adding to our faith. But is that what James says we should do? No, at that point, if you lack the wisdom to do it, start asking for the wisdom. And so I think that we certainly want to focus on the need for our own preparation. But I don't think we should minimize the fact that God is going to give us wisdom and that we don't have to work for it. It is a gift. It says he gives to all liberally. Now, if God's giving me something, then am I getting it from my results or am I getting it because he gave it to me? It says he gave it to me. So
he gives it to us through his word.
So you don't think that God can do it separate and apart from his word?
Well, he can do all kinds of things separate and apart from his word.
But it says he does it.
He teaches us that he doesn't. Everything he does is in accordance with his word.
So if you pray for a safe journey, you expect him to do that through his word? You see my point. God is in control of everything. If I ask him for a safe journey, can he give me a safe journey? Or do I have to say, no, his hands are tied. I can pray for a safe journey, but the best he can do is he can save me if I get killed, but he's not going to be able to intervene and change anything. That's not how I see prayer. I see prayer as we pray and God changes things. I mean, throughout the Old Testament, that's true. And when Solomon asked for wisdom, what did God say he did? He gave him wisdom, not through his word. He opened his mind. He did something to his mind. Can God not do that today? I think he can. Anyway, this is an area of faith, Jesus is very clear. Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. And so the asking is a vital part of this. Virgil?
Just trying to gather some memory here. Dealing with people over the years that have problems and they can't seem to come to a resolution as to what to do or how to deal with it, or even spiritual problems within the church. And what I find and have found trying to help people is just ask some simple questions. Well, do you not believe that God will help you if you ask? And we might be surprised to know the number of times that the answer to that question comes back, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's sad, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And what it always left me with was, here's somebody now that lacks faith. Now we're on to a different trail. And nothing's going to change in this person's life until we can take and build that person up to where he has confidence in God, which is having faith in God.
Right.
God will do what he said he will do. It's the same way with somebody that says, I've sinned so horrendously that I cannot be forgiven. That's not true. That is not true. if we have the faith that is necessary and believe in God and what he's told us and what we read in the scriptures, we can be the most vile person. We can change. We can repent. And we can have forgiveness. And it isn't, it's just a matter of having the confidence in God or the faith in God.
Right. Right. And the faith in the power of prayer. That prayer does change things. Charles?
Yeah, also, you know, when I was in the workforce and the type of job that I did, or certain routes that I used to drive, there were people that didn't like you or like me, you know, for whatever reason. And I had to learn how to deal with those things. You know, and I'd ask God to help me, you know, to understand those individuals and how they felt and everything. Because if I was on a boat for 3 months or whatever, I wasn't going to stay off of that job for 3 months, 2 weeks or something like that. I had to deal with that every day. You know, so a lot of times, you know, I would have to, you know, ask God to help me to get through whatever it was. And a lot of time, most of the time, he did help me because people's attitude would change. But then I had to kind of, I had to look at myself also, too. Maybe there's something that I was doing or saying that they didn't like about me, and that was the reason why. And I've had a few conversations with people, and, you know, they would express things, and then I would express things, and we came to an agreement. And
right.
For the rest of the vote, we got along real well. You know, I mean, it's a personal thing that you as an individual is going to have to deal with whenever it comes to those things. And prayer is a powerful thing.
Right. Well, and I just have to go back on what it says. It says, if you ask of God, he will give to all liberally without reproach, and it will be given to him. So if I ask for something and it's given to me, then did I get it or not? Did I get it through my efforts, or did I get it because I asked?
Because
it says because I asked. If I lack wisdom, then I ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith without doubting. Now, I think the doubting would be, well, I don't know if he can do it or not. Maybe it's just all on me. Maybe I'm the one who just needs to be studying harder, and there's no reason to be asking because the asking isn't going to change anything. If I'm like that, then I'm this guy in verse 6. God has given a promise. When God made a promise to Abraham in Hebrews chapter 6, it says it's impossible for him to what?
Lie.
It's impossible for him to lie, so he's given a strong assurance. So I have an assurance here. And I have to count on that. If I have a problem with wisdom, I have to count on God to keep his promise here. And if I do count on God, then what am I going to be doing? I'm going to be asking. If I'm not asking, what is that telling me? I'm not relying on God. I don't have any confidence in this promise. It's all on me. I'm the one that has to do this. I've got to pull myself up by my own bootstraps. I can't expect God to do anything for me except what would naturally occur through his word. I don't think that's what James is saying here. I don't think verse 5 would be in there if it was all on us. Now, I'm not going to minimize the fact that I've got to have the facts of verses 2 and 3. I can pray all day. And if I don't have those facts in my mind, then it's not going to do any good. But if I have those facts in my mind, then God promises here, it will make a difference. It will make a difference in your ability. So factor that in. If you're not praying for wisdom, you're foolish. You have a lack of faith and you don't trust God. And Jesus promised, if you ask, what will happen? You will receive. You will receive. What man among you, if his son asked for an egg, would give him a stone? So, and your father, who is not even evil like you are in your family relationships, he's going to give you liberally. And so this is a confidence issue. This is a faith issue. This is a trust issue. And it's a submissive. Again, this is a command. It's a command with a promise. It's a conditional promise is what we would call it. So if I lack wisdom, and again, it's easy to know if you lack the wisdom or not. If you can't do what God has asked you to do, then what do you have? Have a lack of wisdom, because wisdom simply means the ability. I wish we had time. We don't now, because we've taken too much time on this other. I wish we had time to go through the wisdom, but I would recommend that you take a look at some of these verses and the applications that I make in that little box. But let's go ahead and and we'll pass over that for now. But basically, wisdom has the ability to do what? Well, what can wisdom do for me?
It can make you avoid all sorts of problems.
Well, yeah, it gives me the ability to see the problem, to know what caused the problem, and to know how to solve the problem. And I solve the problem. Now, if I can't solve the problem, what does that tell me? I don't have the wisdom yet. I have a microwave sitting on my it's sitting down in the basement. I can't figure out what's wrong with it. I just don't have the wisdom. There's just something really, really minor wrong with this thing, but I don't know what it is. So guess what? It's just going to keep sitting there till I either study it out or I get somebody to tell me, here's what you need to do. But until then, I don't know what to do with it, so it's just going to sit there. It's not going to do anything. Well, that's not only my microwave. It may be the way I pray. It may be the way I take the Lord's Supper. It may be the way I do evangelism. It could be any one of a number of things. I just don't know how to do it. Well, if I don't know how to do it, then what should I start doing? Praying for wisdom. Asking God to help me learn how to do it. Skill comes from God. The knowledge comes from the scriptures, but the skill and the applications are given here as something that God has the ability. And again, Solomon was not an overly intelligent man, but what did God do for him? He made him the wisest man in all the earth. Now, how did he do that? Well, it says he gave him breadth of mind. It says that he was able to modify the way his brain works. Now, can God do that? Can he do it today? Yeah, I have no doubt that he can do that. If he can give, he told Hezekiah, you're going to die, get your house in order. But then what did he do? He gave him 15 more years. He healed him and gave him 15 more years. So God has the ability to intervene. He does it all the time. And we call it providence. It's God working outside of the normal channels in order to bring about his will. And as a Christian, can I intervene in that providence and get God to do things for me? Yeah, scriptures teach that very clearly in the power of prayer. So if you lack wisdom, ask of God, and he will give to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. I don't know how James could have worded it any differently or any better in verse 5, that prayer gives wisdom. If you lack wisdom, ask God. He will give it to you liberally. He will give it to you without upbraiding you or reproaching you, and it will be given to you. So I don't think there's any doubt in verse 5 that God is doing something. He can't give liberally unless he does something. It has to be different. Again, I don't know how he does it. I don't have to know how he does it. I just know that if he says he will. And that's, for me, that's a faith issue. Here's a promise, a conditional promise. I lack wisdom, I ask. I lack wisdom, I ask. God gives liberally. God gives without reproach. It will be given. And so verse 5 is a simple barometer of my faith. If I trust God, you're going to see me asking. If I don't trust God, then I won't be asking. And so it comes down to that. And so we have, basically now we have three basic points. First of all, when we fall into a trial, we should feel joy because we know it's creating patience, and patience is helping me to reach toward perfection. If I can't feel that joy, then I need to ask. I need to ask for wisdom. And as I said, if that is true of counting it all joy in trials, it would be true of anything. If there's something I don't know how to do, I need to ask God to help me with it. Brian?
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about prayer? I mean, you know, the very fact that we can pray to the creator of the universe and he knows our needs and we're supposed to ask confidently and without doubt and all of that. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I almost feel like not worthy, right? So we have this balancing act, because we know the scriptures also say sometimes we ask and we do not receive because we ask amiss. So, you know, sometimes it's a balancing act, right? If you feel like if you're confident you're doing exactly what God would have you do, then there's no reason you should doubt. Certainly, we don't doubt his capabilities. Sometimes maybe it's doubting what we should even be asking, you know, or do we question ourselves? Am I asking amiss? Should I be asking? Am I doing everything I can? So, anyways, I don't know about you, but sometimes all that goes into and factors into the prayers I give.
Oh yeah, well definitely, because there's two kinds of prayers. There's the prayers where I know God's will. How do I know God's will when I'm praying?
You know it.
Because He said, if you confess your sins, I'm going to forgive you. If you ask for wisdom, I'm going to give it to you. If you ask for your daily bread, I'm going to give you your daily bread. Now I'm asking for God to spare somebody's life, or now I'm asking God to get involved in something that I don't know His will. Now how do I pray?
That
will be done. And Lord, I hope I have the proper motives when I'm asking for this. Sometimes, you know, somebody wants something really badly, and you hope that why they want it is for honorable reasons, because if it's not for honorable reasons, then are they asking amiss? Yeah, they'd be asking amiss then. So if you lack the wisdom to be able to count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials, then you have a command. Again, this is a command. It's not a suggestion. It's a command. It's in the imperative mode. You must ask God. And then you have God's promise to give it liberally. The word liberally is kind of an interesting term. Let me see if I can find it here. Yeah, I don't have any page numbers, so if you open up your paper and go to the second page, because you flip your paper over where it starts at the top, we can count on God to give if we ask. And it's not there, so let me go back one page.
I think it's page 3 for us.
Yeah. Let him answer.
Oh, you're talking about the generously?
Yeah, I know it's in here. Oh, there he is. Okay, it's at the bottom of page 3. I'm sorry. It's that Greek word haplos. And you see it in Romans. In Romans, the verb is used. This is the adverb. In Romans, the verb is used where it says, he that giveth with liberality, or he that giveth with simplicity. Depends on your translations in Romans chapter 12. The same thing here. If you look at the actual meaning of the word, it means simply, openly, frankly, or sincerely. And then it means, that last one, I think Vines kind of captures for us, is haplos, liberally, with singleness of heart, is used in James 1:5 of God as the gracious and liberal giver. The word may be taken either in the logical sense, signifying unconditionally, simply, or in a moral sense, generously, for the double meaning, compare, and I'm not going to get into that. So the idea of the word is, not only is it generously, but it's with singleness. It's with God really wanting to do this for us. The idea here is that He's open, He's frank, He's sincere. He really wants to help us. And there's only one thing in the way of Him helping us. If you don't ask, you don't have. We've got to ask. So here's God up in heaven just really wanting to help us. But what's He waiting for? He's waiting for the invitation. He's waiting for the asking. So if I ask Him, then He gives to all, not just liberally, but openly, sincerely, with a true desire. And then this without reproach, which if you see at the very bottom there, to upbraid, to revile, to look down upon, to cast in one's teeth. Why would we feel that God might be upset with us for asking for this?
Well, we might be.
Well, why would we feel that way? You mean you still haven't got this down? You're still having to ask for this? You ever feel like that sometimes? You know, why am I still having to ask for this? Why don't I know how to do this? Or, you know, I mastered this 20 years ago, and here I am asking again. I know God's got to be sick and tired of me whining and asking for this. But what does James say? No reproach. No throwing in your teeth. No upbraiding. I'm sick and tired of you asking. Now, the only time God ever manifested of being sick and tired is when the children of Israel were doing what?
Murmuring.
He didn't mind Him asking. Matter of fact, He wants to be asked. But if we grumble and complain, then that's a different situation. But if we have a need, even though if we are very clear in our own mind, this is my fault that I don't have this wisdom. I should have this wisdom by now. I brought this all on myself. So should I not ask them? No, he says, give us all liberally.
Really ask.
So keep asking. Don't give up. Don't be too hard on yourself. God is not going to upbraid you. He's not going to rebuke you. He's just going to give you the wisdom. It will be given. So this is one of the most comprehensive promises we have in the Scriptures. That if you lack wisdom, then you need to ask. If you ask, then God will give you not only generously, but also with open heart, with a real desire, to want to go above and beyond what you're asking for. And and he won't rebuke you. He won't upbraid you. He won't be frustrated with you or angry with you because you're continuing to ask for something. And then the final seal, it will be given. Stated as a fact. No doubt about it whatsoever. Can God make a clearer promise than that? I don't know how he could make it any clearer. I want you to ask. If you lack, if you ask, I'll give it to you liberally, generously, and open-handedly, and open-heartedly. I will not rebuke you, and I will definitely give it to you. So what should we be doing? So, when's the last time you asked for wisdom? Was it today? Last week? Last month? A couple of years ago? When do we ask for wisdom? And the answer to that question is a clear indicator of how much confidence we have in this passage of Scripture. Because, as I say, if God can do that for Solomon, then even if he gave me one millionth of what he gave to Solomon, I'd be in pretty good shape. And he promises that he will involve himself in that. So again, it just comes down to, here's a promise. You either believe it or you don't. You either act on it or you don't. And on the judgment day, God will be showing us that here's what could have happened if you had asked for these things. You don't have because you didn't ask. Now, how can God make it any clearer? If you ask, I'll give it to you. If you don't ask, you won't get it. So that's why I make the point. If one person's asking for wisdom every day and studying as hard as he can, and another guy is not asking for wisdom ever and studying as hard as he can, and they're both equally intelligent, what's going to happen at the end of their life? One's going to be wiser than another, or else this promise isn't true. So, one or the other. And so it comes down again to a lack of faith. It's a lack of faith if I don't count it all joy when I fall into trials. It's a lack of faith if I don't have my priorities straight to where I'm running this race and I need endurance, and every trial brings endurance. And it's a lack of faith if I don't ask for the wisdom to bring it about. Command, 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 command. So we have to do this. All right. Any thoughts in up to verse 5, Ron?
Somebody might say, well, who wouldn't ask for wisdom? But I think this is presupposing, and you've already kind of hit on this, that we want to live right. We want to be right with God. We want to understand his will and have him help us be right. If we don't have that attitude that we want to be right with God and we want his wisdom, then we're, you know, somebody might see, sound strange. They don't want wisdom. Well, then you don't want to be right with God if you're not asking for wisdom.
Because, no, that's right.
And I mean, it might sound very simplistic, but if we never ask for wisdom, we're not probably really wanting to be right with God in all things.
Yeah, it'd be pretty tough to convince God on the judgment day that we were really seeking first his kingdom and his righteousness if we weren't asking him to help us with those areas where we were weak and we were struggling, whether it's lead us not into temptation. Does Jesus say we should pray that he lead us not into temptation?
Yes.
Yeah. Do we ever pray that? Do we ever pray that God will help us with our temptation? I never actually, you know, the wording there is so confusing to me. Would God ever lead me into temptation? What does James say about that in chapter 1? He can't do that. So why does Jesus tell me to do something that I know he can't do? It's an interesting question. Because Jesus is very clear. He words it that way. Do not lead us into temptation. But every time I say that, what's going on in the back of my mind? I know he won't.
Yeah.
I know he won't, but Jesus put it in there. And so it's one of those conundrums, one of those situations where you're constantly thinking about it. Every time I think that, my mind goes through that. Ken, you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just thinking that back when we were talking about murmuring, that sounds like a kind of a negative face. I mean,
he's not doing this for us. He's not probably ever going to do it for us. And that's that is definitely the opposite of what we need to presume that he will do things for us.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many verses in there about that. I forgot to, I think I skipped over one section here. I wanted to talk about how Paul was actually praying that God would give the Ephesians and the Philippians wisdom. Or, excuse me, the Ephesians and Colossians. He said, I'm praying for you that God will give you a spirit of wisdom and revelation in the knowledge of him. Now, can God do that? Well, Paul wouldn't be asking for it if God couldn't do it. And if Paul's praying it for me, should I be praying it for you and for me as well? Yeah, see, this is something that we should be looking at. This is, again, it's on the bottom of page 2, I guess it is. I skipped over it. But those passages, asking it will be given, seeking you will find. And then Paul saying that the God of the Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory, may give to you the spirit of wisdom and revelation and the knowledge of him, the eyes of your understanding being enlightened. And then the next verse there in Colossians, I do not cease to pray for you and ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding. And then that passage in James where he says, if you don't ask, you're not going to get it. So there's a tremendous responsibility here that, and I think Rob really hit it on the head. God is watching us, and God can see how really interested we are in all this by how we're going about it. I mean, year after year, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do this. I can't do this. I don't know how to do personal work, or I don't know how to pray, or I don't know how to do the Lord's Supper, or I don't know how to sing. Well, what are you doing about it? Are you asking for help? And if we're not asking for help, then we're either so depressed we've given up, or we don't have the faith, or we aren't really that interested. And those are not good outcomes. So we all need to take this to heart. We need to go home. We really need to wrestle with some of these questions. First of all, whether I know how to count it all joy. It's a command. I need to have this joy when I look back on my trials. And I need to have this endurance. And I need to be asking for wisdom. And if I'm not doing these things, because again, command, command, command. These are commands one after another. And verse 6 is also a command. Let him ask in faith. Which I guess, you know something, we can't seem to get past one verse per class. I keep thinking we will. I'm all ready to do it. But I think it was a good class. Anyway, this is very practical. This is where the rubber meets the road as far as Christianity is concerned. And so we really need to take some time and think about that this week. All right? Okay. Thanks, everybody.